This is the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Sitting in for Dr. Mohler today, Russell Moore. Dr. Moore is Dean of the School of Theology at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Now, here's your host for today, Dr. Russell Moore.
You read any good books lately about Amish, detective, vampires, in love, at the end of the world? This is Russell Moore sitting in for Albert Mohler. This is the Albert Mohler Program, and we are talking today about Christian fiction. When you walk around in the fiction section of your local Christian bookstore, or if you go on Amazon and you start looking around at what's out there these days from Christian publishers when it comes to fiction, books that are meant for Christian audiences or maybe to persuade non-Christians to become Christians, what do these books tell us? What are these trends going on in these books? What do they tell us about the future of the church? I'm interested to hear from you. What do you love about Christian fiction, and what do you hate about Christian fiction? Give me a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Maybe there's a really good series or a really good genre of Christian fiction that you think is beneficial to the church. Let me know what it is, 877-893-8255. And maybe you've read some Christian fiction that just gives you the creeps. Let me know about that too, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We're talking about Christian fiction today, Christian publishing, books, and what it all means. And I'll tell you why I'm interested in this today, for several reasons. One is I'm interested in fiction. I read a whole lot of fiction, probably more fiction than nonfiction, not a lot of Christian fiction. And I'll tell you why here in just a few minutes, although there are some notable exceptions. But there's an article in the Star Tribune newspaper of Minneapolis that is talking about the International Christian Retail Show, which used to be called the Christian Booksellers Association. It's all the people who are getting together talking about what they're going to be selling in the next year in Christian bookstores and gift shops and so forth. And one of the trends that is mentioned in this article is Amish fiction. Not being written by Amish people, not being published by Amish people, but by evangelical Christian publishers who have decided that there's a lot of market out there for books about Amish people, historical romance books and things like that. As one literary agent puts it in this article, you put a bonnet on it and it's going to sell. And my question is, why? Well, why is that the case? Why are Amish people so marketable right now to evangelical Christians? Another person who is one of the publishing company spokesmen said, if you look at the Left Behind series, and we all are familiar with the Left Behind series, if you look at the Left Behind series, the moon turns to blood and one third of the people die. Or you have people with bonnets on drawing water from the well. It just tells me there are a wide range of things you can talk about, and Christian books can be a lot of things. I think that there's something we can hear in the kinds of books that we like to buy. And by we, I mean Christian people within Christian churches. We can see something about these trends, because right now you've got a lot of people wanting to read about Christian historical fiction, Christian Amish fiction, and you also have vampires. That's the other trend that this article picks up, is vampire fiction. And he talks about these vampire novels that have, for instance, one of them is about a group of characters who have risen from the dead after being tainted by the blood of Judas, the betrayer of Jesus. It is fantasy, a spokesman says, but it weaves it from a biblical perspective and ties it back to the power of the blood, specifically the blood of Christ. And some people are being interviewed in this article saying one of the challenges, if you do Christian vampire novels, is can they get saved at the end? Can a creature who is both alive and dead, does he have a soul that can be saved? And one of these spokespersons for one of these publishing companies says, I think we can redeem a vampire. I don't think that this is a despair too dark to pull out of. Okay, that's a question I think that previous generations of the church never really thought through all that carefully. Can you save a vampire? Can a vampire get saved? But it's the question for people who are writing books, because there's a market of people to sell these books to. When you think about Christian fiction, even if you don't read it, you're going to have people around you all the time who are reading it. That guy next to you on the plane may well be reading The Shack. That lady in your church is probably reading some Karen Kingsbury or something like this. You've got people reading Christian fiction all over the place. Not all of them, I think, even who are Christians. And some people who are writing Christian fiction will say, yeah, that's exactly the point, because we're trying to persuade non-Christians into seeing a Christian understanding of reality and coming to faith in Christ. What are some ways that Christian fiction does that well, and what are some ways it does it poorly? Give me a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. When you look at the world of Christian books, what does it tell you about the health of the church? 877-893-TALK. But first, in the news today, President Barack Obama spoke last night to the NAACP, the 100th anniversary dinner. And President Obama was careful to warn people gathered at the banquet that just because there's an African-American president of the United States, it doesn't mean that racial discrimination is over. This is what he had to say.
But make no mistake, the pain of discrimination is still felt in America. By African-American women paid less for doing the same work as colleagues of a different color and a different gender. By Latinos made to feel unwelcome in their own country. By Muslim Americans viewed with suspicion simply because they kneel down to pray to their God. By our gay brothers and sisters still taunted, still attacked, still denied their rights. On the 45th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, discrimination cannot stand. Not on account of color or gender, how you worship, or who you love. Prejudice has no place in the United States of America. That's what the NAACP stands for. That's what the NAACP will continue to fight for as long as it takes.
And, of course, we talked about on this program earlier this week that issue of racial equality and of affirmative action and related issues have been on the forefront of the hearings in the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee about the possible confirmation of Sonia Sotomayor, President Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court. And today she has a new supporter and a new opponent. Senator Richard Lugar of Indiana says he's going to vote for her. He thinks that she has a judicial temperament that is acceptable on the court, and he thinks that she has handled herself well in the questioning, and he plans to be a Republican who will vote for her, whereas Senator Mitch McConnell, the Senate minority leader, says he will be voting against her. And he is concerned about the possibility of her being a judicial activist. He says he has seen some evidence of that, especially in the speeches that she has given, speeches that were brought up repeatedly during the committee hearings over the past couple days, and that he will be a no vote on Sonia Sotomayor. Now, there's an article about Sarah Palin. I promise I'm not going to keep talking about Sarah Palin, but I did find this interesting because I follow Sarah Palin on Twitter. Some of you may as well. And she said that as soon as she is no longer governor of Alaska, that she's going to have less politically correct tweets. A tweet is a message that you put up on Twitter, 140 characters or less. And so I don't know what Sarah Palin plans to be saying after she is the ex-governor of Alaska, but apparently she's just going to tell it the way that she sees it at that point, and that will be interesting to watch, as it certainly does look like now she's planning to run for president and not to go home to Wasilla. CNN has a really interesting article about whether or not moon landings were faked, and not so much really questioning whether or not the moon landings were faked, but the fact that you've got at least 6% of the American people, according to some Gallup polls, saying that they doubt the Apollo 11 moon landings actually happened. Full moon somewhere, people. Maybe it is where you are right now. And maybe you're sitting there reading The Shack, or some Amish romance, or maybe a antebellum pre-Civil War Christian salvation story, Christian fiction. What of it do you think is really good? What do you think Christian fiction is doing to benefit the church and the cause of Christ? And where do you think it's showing some bad symptoms of American evangelical Christianity? Give me a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Christian fiction, is it worth reading? We'll be back in a few minutes to talk about this. This is Russell Moore sitting in for Albert Mohler, and this is the Albert Mohler Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
We've been spending most our lives living in an Amish paradise. Rich as plain and simple guys living in an Amish paradise.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. This is Russell Moore sitting in for Albert Mohler, and we're talking today about Christian fiction. And according to the Minneapolis Star Tribune, one of the trends all over Christian fiction right now is Amish folk. You ever heard of a lady named Beverly Lewis? Well, apparently she is selling a lot of books talking about Amish people, starting with a book that she wrote back in 1997 called The Shunning, and it was kind of loosely based, according to the newspaper, on her grandmother's experience leaving her old order Mennonite family in order to marry a Bible college student. And in recent days, this Amish trend has become very, very popular in Christian fiction. And according to this article, so is Christian vampire novels. Because you've got vampire novels out there in the secular world, and Twilight and other things are doing very well. So why not have a Christian version of that? That seems to be a new trend that is on the rise. My question is, when you think about Christian fiction, when you think about what people are reading that you know, whether it's soft historical fiction kind of stuff, or whether it is more in your spiritual warfare, end times kind of novel, what do those things tell us about how we're doing as a Christian church? Give me a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. When it comes to Christian fiction, maybe you out there are saying, there's this book that is a Christian work of fiction that is really, really worth giving to people. Well, what is it? Tell me about it and tell me why. And maybe you say, hey, there's a whole area of Christian fiction we just need to watch out for. Tell me what that is. 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. And I have on the line two friends of mine who are kind of insider-outsiders on this issue, because both of them are in the Christian publishing world. Justin Taylor, who is the project director for the ESV Study Bible and associate publisher at Crossway Books, and who blogs and writes, he's an author himself, and he also is very attuned to what's going on in evangelicalism. And also Jennifer Lyle, who is acquisitions editor for Women's Books with both the trade and academic divisions of the B&H Publishing Group in Nashville. She previously served in a similar role for Moody Books. Neither of them are working with Christian fiction necessarily, but both of them are in the Christian publishing world, and they both can see the trends that are going on. Jennifer and Justin, welcome to the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks so much.
Good to have both of you here.
Thank you. Great to be with you, Russell.
Now, were both of you at the big Christian retail event over the past couple of weeks?
I was, yes. I just got back Wednesday evening.
Well, tell us what it looks like. When you're looking around at kind of the new products that are going to be coming out, Jennifer, in the next year or so, what trends do you see?
Well, I think certainly you're continuing to see the industry responding to the needs of what is more and more a post-Christian culture, and less adults who are buying books who were not raised in the church, not raised within our worldview, and therefore are trying to wrestle with the issues of today without the benefit of a biblical worldview and frankly, those of us in publishing, at times scrambling to see how can we best connect those dots through the mediums that we have available.
Okay. All right. Justin, when you're looking at this from Crossway and from a very respected publisher of doctrinally sound material that also puts out some very good Christian fiction and is known for some pieces of Christian fiction as well, what concerns you when you look around in Christian publishing right now?
Well, I think the main concern is whether Christians are taking the lead, operating from a scriptural worldview with the goal of glorifying Christ and presenting the full truth and glory of the Christian worldview, or whether or not the church is really just trying to do a Christianized version of what the culture is already doing.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the divide, I think. And, you know, as you walk around at the Christian Booksellers Convention, it's the same sort of paradigm we see all the time. The good is getting better and the worse is getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's really good, encouraging things happening in the Christian book industry, and there's really discouraging things happening. But if we're going to just try to copy culture and try to compete with culture, we'll lose every time because the culture has more resources. They're going to do it better. And it's not really fundamentally operating from a Christian worldview. So I think it's a losing cause to try to go that route.
I asked on my Twitter page today, I said, when you walk around in a Christian bookstore and you look at the fiction section, what's the message that you're seeing there? And somebody responded and said, the message I see is read the shack, read the shack, read the shack, read the shack, read the shack. How do you explain how phenomenally well the shack is doing in terms of sales? Jennifer?
Well, I would say anecdotally, it's interesting you raise that question. I had a business meeting while at ICRS, and we discussed this very topic. And the individual with whom I was speaking does a lot of prison ministry and shared with me that in the context of the prison, that this has become a huge, huge movement with all of these inmates reading the shack. And what they have all said, and this individual was saying it to me, trying to sell me on the shack, which is admittedly going to be impossible, but to be honest. But she shared with me how they all talked about how they resonated so much with it because they didn't have male figures in their life. And for God to be identified in that way was, they had never been able to get there. But yet,
identified as a woman.
As a woman, exactly. But since in the shack, God is identified not only as a woman, but as an African-American woman, as I understand, with this inmate population that was largely African-American males who had been raised by African-American women, and what is, you know, a very matriarch kind of driven society, culture, they really resonated with that. So it was clearly reflective that by distorting the biblical view of God and, you know, coalescing or acquiescing to the culture is essentially that which made it relevant. And that's exactly the problem that Justin was hitting on just a moment ago.
Don't you think, Justin, too, though, with the shack, I think one of the things that the shack does that a lot of Christian fiction doesn't do is it takes seriously the dark side of human existence. It's not, oh, we all got saved and now we're happy all the day. There really is a dark aspect that's present there, and it's taken seriously.
Right, and I do think that that's tapping into something that people are interested in. At the end of the day, people are getting excited and feeling transformed by something like the shack. But you have to ask the other question of, are they getting equally as excited and transformed by the gospel of Jesus Christ as found in Scripture? And if there's a disconnect between those two, I think then we need to re-examine how we're viewing Christian fiction.
All right. What do you think? Is Christian fiction taking us toward the gospel or away from it? Give me a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. This is Russell Moore, sitting in for Albert Mohler, and this is the Albert Mohler Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get on the line, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com and email your questions and comments. Here again is your guest host, Dr. Russell Moore.
I recognize and know that probably very few Amish people actually listen to the Albert Mohler Program, since it does require electricity, radio lines, and that kind of thing. But I do know there are a lot of evangelical Christians reading about Amish people who listen to the Albert Mohler Program, because Amish fiction and historical fiction generally, and according to the Minneapolis Star Tribune, Christian vampire fiction, are now joining with the typical kind of Christian fiction that we've had around for a while, kind of the apocalyptic end of the world, kind of a dispensationalist reading of fiction, the Left Behind series and so forth, along with kind of the spiritual warfare kind of fiction that we see probably best in This Present Darkness and Frank Peretti's stuff, This Present Darkness, and then on down through The Monster and some other books that he has written about those kinds of themes. I'm wondering, when you think about Christian fiction, do you think it's taking us toward the gospel or away from the gospel? Is it a kind of entertainment that is just further putting us into a Christian bubble? Or is Christian fiction something that we can really use to do discipleship and to do evangelism? Give me a call at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. And I'd love to know what you think about when you think about Christian books that are fictional works that present the gospel. I've got on the line with me Jennifer Lyle and Justin Taylor, both who are working in the publishing business. Justin with Crossway Books and Jennifer with B&H Publishing. And Justin and Jennifer, when I think about Christian fiction, a lot of the most Christian of the fiction that I read is not Christian fiction. It's fiction that's being written by people who have a Christian understanding and they have some Christian themes. But a lot of what I read that passes for capital C Christian fiction just isn't done very well artistically. Do you think I'm being fair here?
I certainly think so. I think, you know, one of the things that we should look at when deciding whether or not to read a book, or as we're reading it, what should be going through our mind and heart, we should pay attention to the excellence of the craft.
Mm-hmm.
Edification is crucial, you know, what it does to us. But as Christians, we're called to a higher standard. We're called to a standard of excellence, not only thinking things that are true and honorable and just and pure and lovely and excellent, as Philippians 4:8 says, but also to create that, to imitate our Creator. And a lot of times it seems that those outside of the church are doing a more excellent job than those inside the church at producing fiction.
Exactly. You know, sometimes I get the feel when I'm reading some Christian fiction that it's almost like those old ABC News after-school specials. They were there to try to tell you not to smoke marijuana. And so it had this really contrived kind of dialogue. Well, as you know, Judy, after I started smoking this marijuana, it became a gateway drug. And after that, I started doing cocaine. And as you know, that's how I completely ruined my life and wound up in rehab. A lot of Christian fiction tends to read that way, which is not the way the Bible reads. Jennifer, don't you think that one of the things we really need is some honesty when it comes to the dark side of life as well as to the hope that is there in the gospel?
I do. And, you know, I really believe that whenever you're talking about Christian fiction, that we need fiction, whether it is Christian or not, honestly, that reflects the realities of life. And there's no deeper and more profound reality of life than the spiritual realities. And so I am one, there are some within Christian fiction or within Christian publishing who would argue that, you know, it is not even permissible. You should not have a lost person in a Christian fiction book. And if they're lost, then they shouldn't sin, surely, because then someone who's reading it might be exposed to sin. And I disagree there. I think that we need to reflect the reality that lost people impact loss, and they sin, and there are consequences to sin, and believers sin, and there are consequences to our sin, but that ultimately, that much as what you do with a sermon illustration or with, you know, just an illustration in a nonfiction book, mm-hmm. that you're leading the reader on a vicarious experience that pushes them toward holiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the most profoundly Christian novelist of the 20th century was probably Flannery O'Connor, and there was nothing flowery about that. What do you think? Christian fiction, is it pushing us toward holiness or away from holiness? Toward the gospel or away from the gospel? Give me a call at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. This is Russell Moore, sitting in for Albert Mohler, and this is the Albert Mohler Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Now we live,
yes, we live in a
two-story house.
Oh, what's Brenda?
But there's no love there. I've got my story.
And I've got my.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. This is Russell Moore sitting in for Albert Mohler. People love stories, and they like to live their life around a story, but there are some very different kinds of stories out there, and Christians are trying to reach a lost world and a disciple, a Christian world, through Christian fiction. I want to know from you, do you think Christian fiction is helping us as Christians toward holiness and toward reaching people with the gospel, or just keeping us in a bubble? 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I have on the line with me Justin Taylor with Crossway Books and Jennifer Lyle with B&H Books, both of whom are very active in the evangelical world and very active in the publishing business. And we're talking about what can we see and discern from what's going on in evangelical publishing, especially as it relates to fiction. My question to you is, do you see some good Christian fiction out there? And do you see some stuff that worries you? 877-893-8255. We have Ashley on the line, who's calling from Duncansville, Pennsylvania. Ashley, welcome to the Albert Mohler Program.
Thank you.
What's your thought about this topic?
I think, especially with the Amish books, I've read them since I was a teenager, and that's really what gave me my interest in reading.
Oh,
and especially with Beverly Lewis's books, I really have enjoyed reading hers because characters have challenged me in my Christian walk. A lot of their humility and even their willingness to be a witness within the Amish community, where that's really something that's dangerous for them. And even though it's a book, their Christian biblical attributes challenged me. And there is a lot of books out there that aren't, you know, that don't present the gospel clearly, but Beverly Lewis, Jeanette Oak, and even Terry Blackstock, they all, in their books, have a great storyline, but present the gospel very clearly.
So, Ashley, for you, it's kind of seeing some models of people who are living out the Christian life in a fictional setting, that what was helpful to you.
Very much.
All right. Justin Taylor, I understand that you are an enthusiast for Christian romance novels, particularly Christian historical fiction romance novels. When you think about, I'm only teasing you, Justin, but when you think about this issue, I doubt you have ever actually read an Amish Christian fiction novel. If you have, let me know, but I doubt it. But when you think about the genre, don't you think there's something about Christians wanting to think about a simpler time? I mean, this kind of reminds me a little bit of Little House on the Prairie theme, in which you're reflecting on a day in which there just wasn't all of the hubbub of temptation and technology and all of these things. Don't you think that some of these novels, they might tell us something about our anxieties as modern Christians?
I think you're exactly right, Dr. Moore. I mean, to look within our hearts and ask what's drawing us to these things, and I think there's something good that we desire. We desire a less complex time, a less industrialized time, a time when there was greater community, when we actually knew the people who owned the store down the block. There weren't so many choices. There was less consumerism. The problems even seemed simpler. And so I think that's something good. And then we also have to be careful of the bad. So I think there's both good and bad, because I think even though we desire that, there can also be a subtle temptation towards escapism, you know, to want to go back to sort of a romanticized time where even though the problems on the surface may look less complicated, the human heart hasn't changed from, you know, Laura Ingalls Wilder to where we're living today. So there's a subtle temptation towards escapism and the almost an idolatry of the past of if we could just return back there, then things would be easier. Then I wouldn't have this sort of temptation. So I see a good positive thing drawing us towards that, and also something that we need to be cautious of, because you're not going to find occultism in these sort of romance novels, but there's a more subtle temptation to make its own form of idolatry through romance and through prairie life.
Yeah, I think it's an idealized past and an idealized future. You've got a kind of a longing to escape from the world that I'm in right now, and some people are looking at, well, let me find some refuge here in a long ago time in which I didn't have all these pressures. Some people are looking to, let's think about when Jesus comes back and all the enemies of God are evaporated. There's something good there. There's a theme in Scripture that's present in both directions, but there also that has to be balanced with an understanding of living in the world as it is and recognizing it as it is. Jennifer, when you think about Christian fiction, if you've got somebody in a church who says, I really like Christian fiction and I want something that's really good, what would you recommend?
To be honest, I would first start to ask them, what's the issue? What is the purpose? Why are you looking toward fiction? What are you wanting to accomplish? Do you just want pure entertainment? If so, then maybe I'm going to go a certain route with that. But to be honest, and maybe it's most appropriate for me to say this as a female, but I have a really hard time with a lot of the things that are out there that we would consider to be the most safe and maybe even the most wholesome. Maybe it's the stories that are the seemingly godly Christian romance stories where you have a very godly man as the lead character. The problem is that more often than not, it is an escape from reality. It is either a utopian picture that at the end of the book you've got to come back to your life, and if it's a wife, she's got to come back to her husband, and it becomes an imbalance and an escape even within that. And so to me, the issue is, what's driving you there? Do you have a plane ride? That's one thing. Are you looking to meet a need that really should be met within the pages of Scripture or some other kind of fellowship? That's a bigger issue.
Bless your heart, Jennifer Lyle. You have just taken on the romance novel ladies. But I want you ladies to know, I didn't say it. Jennifer Lyle did. I agree with her, but she said it. So send your emails to her and your complaints to her, not to me. I got them last year. I've paid my dues. Thank you, Jennifer Lyle and Justin Taylor, for talking to us about Christian fiction. I'll be right back in a few moments with some closing thoughts about what Christian fiction tells us about who we are for good and for ill, and how we can channel that in a different direction. This is Russell Moore sitting in for Albert Mohler, and this is the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. This is Russell Moore sitting in for Albert Mohler, and this is the Albert Mohler Program, and we're talking today about Christian fiction. I was teasing Jennifer Lyle, B&H Books, a few minutes ago, but there's a reality there that I have found that when you address that issue of romance novels, you're going to get a lot of people who are really upset. She's exactly right, though. There is an unhealthy escapism that can happen not just with kind of a Christianized, sanitized view of romance, but also in a Christianized view of shoot 'em up. You know, Christian videos in which you're taking out your rage, that I think is more problematic for men, taking out their rage in seeing the enemies of God slaughtered. There's a kind of escapism that can happen in an unhealthy and unbalanced kind of a way. But I think that what Christian fiction does point us toward is that fiction, particularly story, tells us something about the human heart and human condition. I read a book just this week called The Reluctant Fundamentalist, that's written from the perspective of a Muslim who comes to America, and he winds up back in Pakistan and is something of a jihadist in the end. And one of the things that book helped me with is empathy, is not sympathy, but empathy, thinking about how somebody who is very different than I am might be thinking. I think fiction does that in a very helpful and healthy way for Christians. And by that, I think you ought to be reading fiction, but I don't think you ought to be reading simply Christian fiction. That's helpful, and that's fine. If you enjoy Christian fiction, have at it. But I don't want us to be drawn into a little box or a little bubble in which we're reading our own entertainment and not listening to the observations and the questions and sometimes the longings that are written by non-Christians in fiction. Sometimes I think you can hear what non-Christians really think in fiction easier than you can hear it in their nonfiction, because the guard is down and they're telling you often with kind of raw emotion, I'm scared of death. I'm scared of judgment. Fiction can help us to hear that, can help us to experience something of what it's like to be in that kind of desperation, and can also point us to what it means to enjoy joy in Christ. This is Russell Moore, sitting in for Albert Mohler, and this is the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.